Henrietta Lacks, a poor black woman, died from aggressive cancer. Henrietta Lacks was born on August 1, 1920, in Roanoke, Virginia. Growing up, she helped her family on their tobacco farm, where she worked hard harvesting the crops and transporting them to South Boston to sell. In her free time, she played with her cousin, David Lacks, who was called Day. At the age of 20, Henrietta married Day, and the couple quickly started having children. However, times were difficult for small farmers, and the family struggled with money. To improve their situation, Henrietta and Day decided to move to Sparrows Point, near Baltimore. In early 1951, Henrietta visited the gynecology department at Johns Hopkins Hospital after noticing a lump on her cervix. After doctors took a sample for testing, they sent her home. She returned to her normal routine, caring for her children, cooking, and managing the household. Then, the results came back, and Henrietta was diagnosed with stage 1 epidermoid carcinoma of the cervix. At that time, Johns Hopkins used radium, a radioactive substance, to treat cervical cancer. Radium is very effective at killing cancer cells, but it can also destroy healthy tissue, sometimes causing burns and other damage. Despite the risks, Henrietta gave her consent for whatever treatments or surgeries the doctors thought were necessary. She was brought to the hospital's ward for colored women, where she endured hours of painful radium treatment, which burned much of her body. Unfortunately, the treatments didn't work, and Henrietta's condition worsened. She passed away from cancer on October 4, 1951. Henrietta Lacks died, but her HeLa cells lived on and prospered. In the early 1950s, scientists and doctors were working hard to keep human cells alive outside the body. This was crucial for research into curing diseases like cancer, polio, herpes, and influenza. However, they faced a big challenge when they removed cells from the body and put them in a special liquid to help them survive, called a culture medium. Most of the cells would die quickly. At Johns Hopkins, George Gay, who led tissue culture research, was determined to find a solution. He invented a breakthrough technique called the roller tube culturing method. This technique would prove to be his most important invention, allowing scientists to keep cell cultures alive outside the body for extended periods. Henrietta Lacks and the amazing HeLa cells. Dr. George Gay devised a cylinder with holes for special test tubes, known as roller tubes, which rotated slowly around the clock. His theory was straightforward. Cells, such as those from Henrietta Lacks' cancer, require constant motion akin to the circulation of blood and other fluids in our bodies to survive. Mary Kubitschek, Gay's assistant, was skeptical that Henrietta's isolated cancer cells, named HeLa after the first two letters of her first and last name, would endure. However, just 2 days later, Kubitschek and her colleagues were astonished. The cells not only stayed alive but multiplied rapidly, doubling every 24 hours, faster than they did in Henrietta's own body. The HeLa cells survived because of Gay's groundbreaking techniques and their aggressive behavior. They spread rapidly in Henrietta's body, enabling them to flourish. Gay proudly proclaimed that he had cultivated the first immortal human cells and distributed them to laboratories studying diseases such as polio and cancer. Scientists built a HeLa cell factory for combating diseases. Henrietta's death in 1951 spurred plans for a HeLa factory to mass-produce cells weekly, aiming to cure polio. HeLa cells were perfect for this for several reasons. Firstly, they were inexpensive to produce and research on compared to testing on monkeys, which was costly and widespread at the time. Monkeys were the standard test subjects for disease research, but using them was expensive, limiting large-scale experiments. Secondly, HeLa cells could thrive in a culture medium. Unlike other cells that needed a glass surface and stopped growing when space ran out, HeLa cells could keep growing as long as there was a culture medium. Thirdly, George Gay found that HeLa cells were robust during transportation tests, reproducing quickly and surviving shipping well. Lastly, HeLa cells were highly susceptible to the polio virus, making them invaluable for polio research. The National Foundation for Infantile Paralysis, NFIP, set up the HeLa Distribution Center to support the growth and distribution of these cells to research labs. Quickly exposed to various conditions, the mass-produced HeLa cells were used to study not only polio but also numerous other diseases. What started with Gay isolating and shipping a cell culture to other labs soon grew into a profitable institution. The legacy of HeLa cells and the Lax family. HeLa cells rapidly spread worldwide from lab to lab, gaining fame while forgetting their origin. In 1999, the author discovered articles from a HeLa cells conference at Morehouse Medical School. Roland Patillo, the organizer and George Gay's only Black student, revealed the Lax family's reluctance to discuss Henrietta or her cells. They believed doctors took Henrietta's cells without permission or informing her. The Lax family harbored a deep distrust of the medical industry due to its history of exploiting Black Americans in studies like the notorious Tuskegee syphilis experiments. In the 1930s, scientists studied syphilis by enlisting hundreds of uneducated, poor Black men, many unaware they had the disease. The researchers observed the disease progress without treating it, despite knowing penicillin could cure it. After confirming her intentions wouldn't upset Henrietta's family, Patillo provided their contact details. Despite calling Henrietta's husband and children for a meeting, they didn't show up. Undeterred, she traveled to Clover, Virginia, hoping to connect with Henrietta's distant relatives. She believed meeting her cousins could eventually lead her to Henrietta's immediate family. Henrietta's family faced hardships after her death. After Henrietta passed away, her family faced financial struggles. To support them, Day, her husband, took on two jobs. Their eldest son, Lawrence, left school to care for his younger siblings, Sonny, Joe, and Deborah. The children wondered about their mother's fate but respected their father's wish not to ask questions. Years later, Deborah, now in high school, confronted her father for answers about Henrietta. Day simply replied, "Her name was Henrietta Lax. She died when you were too young to remember." Henrietta's distant relatives in Baltimore and Clover, Virginia were sought out decades later. Contact was also made with the doctors who had treated her. This effort connected them with Henrietta's immediate family. Initially hesitant to discuss Henrietta, they eventually opened up and maintained communication throughout the book's creation. The family, like the researcher, gained new insights into Henrietta's illness and her unwitting contributions to medicine. Black Americans historically distrust the medical profession. The Lax family's reluctance to share Henrietta's story with a white reporter was rooted in a deep-seated distrust of the medical profession. This mistrust stemmed from a long history of exploitation of Black Americans by medical professionals. Many of the stories circulating within the Black community about medical mistreatment were fictional, though some were based on truth. One such tale, the story of the night doctors, claimed that doctors from Johns Hopkins would abduct Black people late at night for experiments. This myth was fueled by white slave owners who spread fear among their slaves to prevent escapes, even dressing as doctors or spirits to scare them. While this story was fictional, actual medical experiments were conducted on slaves to test surgical methods. In the 1900s, with hospitals and research centers paying for bodies for experimentation, Black people's distrust of the medical field only grew. The proximity of Johns Hopkins to a poor Black community added to this suspicion. Despite the hospital's mission to provide care for the poor, the myth surrounding the night doctors only heightened the tension between Black communities and the medical industry. This historical context played a big part in Henrietta's family's hesitance to trust anyone from the medical field, including those who wanted to study Henrietta's cells. HeLa cells aided discoveries, but overuse hampered diverse research. In 1966, a significant revelation shook the world of scientific research. HeLa cells, widely distributed to advance medical discoveries, inadvertently contaminated numerous other cell cultures. This discovery came to light when geneticist Stanley Gardeler, investigating genetic markers, identified a common marker across many cultures. It turned out that HeLa cells had spread their genetic imprint far and wide, posing a challenge to the purity of research findings. At a pivotal conference on cell culture, Gardeler's findings sparked widespread concern. Researchers realized that the presence of HeLa cells had compromised the integrity of countless experiments. This contamination not only raised ethical and scientific questions but also underscored the need for rigorous standards in cell research to ensure accuracy and reliability in scientific advancements. Turning to doctors at Johns Hopkins, she learned they too sought more samples for study, adding to her concerns. Henrietta's cells brought doctors and the Lax family together for discussion. He lost cell contamination. Scientists understood that different cell cultures could inadvertently mix, but the full extent of HeLa cells' impact remained unclear. Henrietta's cells not only survived in the air and on surfaces like dust particles but also spread easily from unwashed hands and tools, rapidly infiltrating other cultures. Gardeler's revelation was a significant breakthrough, exposing widespread contamination of various cell lines by HeLa. This contamination indicated that these cultures shared identical genetic traits, challenging the validity of extensive research efforts. While many researchers continued their work unaffected, a minority acknowledged the seriousness of Gardeler's findings. They urgently sought methods to detect the presence of HeLa, leading to collaboration with Henrietta's family to address this critical scientific challenge. Scientists investigating HeLa connected with the Lax family for information. The contamination of HeLa cells prompted doctors to find Henrietta's family. Luckily, they were patients at Johns Hopkins, so contacting them was straightforward. Doctors hoped to use their samples to study the contamination and map the human genome. In 1973, at Yale University, researchers aimed to locate Henrietta's children to solve the HeLa contamination. Victor McCusick, who had studied HeLa, tasked Susan Hsu with finding the Lax family and getting their blood samples. Hsu contacted Day to gather genetic samples from Lawrence, Sunny, and Deborah. Meanwhile, a nurse visited Joe, now Zachariah, in prison for his samples. While Hsu claimed the tests were for research, Day told his children it was to check for cancer. This discrepancy left the truth unclear. Deborah, worried about cancer like her mother, sought more information. Approaching her father for details about Henrietta's health, she found his answers insufficient. Turning to doctors at Johns Hopkins, she learned they too sought more samples for study, adding to her concerns. Henrietta's cells brought doctors and the Lax family together for discussion. Privacy concerns in cell donation extend beyond the HeLa case. Henrietta's case with the HeLa cells is extraordinary because her aggressive cancer contributed significantly to medical research. However, it's not unique. Similar situations have occurred. One example is John Moore, an Alaskan pipeline worker in 1976. At just 31 years old, Moore thought he was facing death when he developed a rare and lethal cancer called hairy cell leukemia. David Goal, a cancer researcher at UCLA, treated Moore by removing his enlarged spleen, which weighed 22 pounds, much heavier than a healthy spleen. During Moore's treatment, Goal developed and sold Moore's cells, named Mo, without Moore's knowledge or consent. When Moore found out, he sued Goal for invading his privacy and profiting from his cells without permission. Despite Moore's efforts, Goal won the case and continued marketing the valuable Mo cells. Turn medical challenges into innovation. Ted Slavin, born with hemophilia, naturally produced hepatitis B antibodies. His doctor advised him on their commercial potential, leading Slavin to market them. He partnered with Nobel laureate Baruch Bloomberg to advance hepatitis B treatments, harnessing his unique condition for medical breakthroughs. Moore and Slavin differed from Henrietta because they could legally challenge the use of their cells. Unlike Henrietta, who had passed away and couldn't claim ownership of her cells anymore. Personal rights versus medical research rights. From Henrietta's time until 2009, the practice of using patients' cells without consent wasn't illegal. This issue mainly concerns consent and finances. In the U.S., there's a large database of tissue samples, with over 300 million stored from 170 million people. In 2009, $13.5 million from the NIH was invested in a database for newborn samples. Doctors need a patient's permission to use their samples for research. However, they can keep samples from diagnostic tests, like removing moles, without asking. Supporters think the laws are enough, with many groups looking into this. But opponents say patients deserve to know how their cells might be used. This could involve serious issues like nuclear tests, abortion studies, or racial experiments. The future of cell marketing and financial disclosure. The future of marketing and commercializing cells seems assured. However, the requirement for doctors to disclose potential financial gains to patients remains uncertain. A major concern is gene patenting, focusing on who owns and distributes biological materials. In 1999, President Clinton's National Bioethics Advisory Commission highlighted inadequate federal oversight of tissue research. They recommended granting patients more control over how their cells are used but avoided addressing financial profits. Key points. 1. A groundbreaking cell discovery revolutionized medical research and made disease studies cheaper and faster. 2. Early efforts to preserve cells for research faced obstacles until an innovative culturing technique made it possible. 3. The rapid growth of these cells allowed scientists to research diseases like polio without needing costly animal testing. 4. Despite enormous medical advances, ethical issues arose over using people's cells without permission. 5. Family distrust and historical injustices against Black Americans created challenges in understanding the legacy of these cells. 6. Widespread cell contamination revealed serious research issues and led scientists to work with the affected family. 7. Legal debates continue on whether patients should control the use and profits of their biological materials.